This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
People and all this hatred and bitterness is coming into me. And finally, I just said, nuh-uh. He put his hand like this. No, they killed our boy, but I'm not going to let them kill me. And I'm going to go down the path of forgiveness that Jesus taught us to do. And he was the first victim's family I met. Now I've met hundreds of people over these years, victims' families. He was the first one to teach me, though, that what forgiveness is not first and foremost what you do for the one that who's hurt you to lift their burden. It's a way of saving your own life. It's a way of preserving wholeness, as we can see in Bill Pelkey. Because then when, and Lauren LeBlanc said, he said, people think forgiveness is weak, like you're condoning what they did. He said, it kills you to not forgive. It was killing me. And he said, because who I am is to be a person who loves people and helps people. And so it was a way of preserving your own life. And it gave me an insight. When Jesus said, love your enemies, it doesn't mean condone what enemies do. Or it's gotten to be like a cliche, you know, that people say, oh, yeah, forgive and forget. But it's not letting the love and integrity of our life be damaged forever by the hate.
Sister Helen Prejean and Bill Pelkey, we thank you for being with us. Bill Pelkey will follow up on whether or not you meet with Paula Cooper. And Helen Prejean, we're going to do part two of this interview after the broadcast and post it at democracynow.org. We thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Does it for our broadcast. Our website is democracynow.org. Helen Prejean's book is called Dead Man Walking, The Eyewitness Account of the Death Penalty That Sparked a National Debate. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Shafia Monroe with the International Center for Traditional Childbirth, which is holding a special event for Black moms and moms-to-be this month. We'll talk about the infant mortality rate in African and African-American families, the highest in our region.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual 2013 Closer Electronic Music Festival, which starts June 20th. Closer PDX is hosting this cutting-edge electronic music and dance festival with an unparalleled selection of local and regional talent and labels. The Closer Electronic Music Festival is being held on the inner sides of East and West Portland at many different venues. From the kickoff at Crush on June 20th to the Closer at Selwood Riverfront on June 23rd, there will be more than 50 performers and special guests. More information and tickets for this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. Wisdom of the Elders is committed to Native American cultural sustainability, multimedia education, and race conciliation. It especially seeks to correct misconceptions and prejudice, to bring health and wellness to Native people, and demonstrate how Indian culture has and is continuing to enrich our worlds. An Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, its second annual gala, is planned for Friday, June 21st, at 6:30 p.m. in the Rose Ballroom of the Ainsworth Event Center in Southwest Portland. The featured guest and keynote speaker will be Deanna D. Dart, Ph.D., curator of Native American art at the Portland Art Museum. Cedar Rose will perform a collaborative musical effort that focuses on traditional and contemporary Native American sounds formed by Karen Kitchen and Nico Wind. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8:09, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Yes, this is live progressive talk radio every Wednesday morning on KBOO, no matter what you may have heard on the air from the KBOO Interim Station Manager. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, the International Center for Traditional Childbirth is holding special events for Black moms and moms-to-be this month. We are spending the hour with founder Shafia Monroe, who's built connections between Black communities and county health workers to address the infant mortality rate in African and African American families. Shafia, thank you to the air for coming on the air once more.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a great morning.
It is a great morning. And so what we're looking at is the Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair. It's coming up Saturday, June 29th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Lentz Park. And we have more information on that. Free event for pregnant women, new mothers and fathers to learn tips for a healthy pregnancy, breastfeeding tips and newborn care. Shafia, talk about the International Center for Traditional Childbearing, the work you do and why it's so important.
Thank you, Lisa, for always supporting the ICTC. That's the acronym for the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. So ICTC, we began in 1991 here in Portland, Oregon, because we saw a need for African-American women not having culturally sensitive care that could help them improve birth outcome. And a lot of people may already know that, unfortunately, the infant mortality rate, which means the death of an infant before its first birthday, has always been higher for African-American families. And unfortunately, even 2013, it continues. So ICTC is all about providing information to let the people know there is a problem, how we can reduce that problem, and then providing opportunities such as training to become a midwife or a doula, childbirth classes, and then with our relationship between the Portland Water Bureau, which works around lead prevention, also higher in communities of color. We do something every year, and this particular one is called the Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair. We did it last year, 2011. It was amazing. And so we work to do legislative processes as well as events. And so at this point in time, we're seeing a better outcome. We're seeing more women of color, particularly African-American women, knowing that there are options to have a full-term baby. And some of the reasons why Black babies have a higher rate of mortality is because it takes 38 to 42 weeks to carry a full-term baby. Anyone's baby should weigh at least 5 pounds, 8 ounces. But now studies are saying due to stress and systemic racism and the fact that a lot of the provisions being provided for women of color are not often culturally sensitive, there's a lot more stress besides all of the economic issues that particular families go through, that mothers cannot carry their babies a full term. So therefore, they're birthing babies at 7 months, which is 28 weeks or 30 weeks. And these babies weigh 4 pounds, 3 pounds, very, very small, in the NICU with the tubes that we see. And most will not live to be one. They're going to die because it is too small. They can't cope. And those who do live have a lifetime of chronic illnesses. So even studies are saying that babies that are born too soon, long-term, are more prone for cardiovascular problems, corneal blindness, you know, multiple cirrhosis, deaf, ADD. So we really want to prevent. We're about prevention. We want to give the information. There is a problem. Here are some solutions. That's what we're excited about. It's not about here's bad news. No, here's bad news, but yet here's things that we can do to make it good news. So the mothers that we do serve are going full term. Their babies do weigh more than 5 pounds, 8 ounces. They are breastfeeding their babies. They're getting to have a profession called a doula, which is a professional person trained to understand the emotional aspects. What I like about being a midwife is that pregnancy is about celebration. It's a time of rejoicing. It is a new life coming to the world. Who's that new person coming to the world? Who's that new person coming into our family? So it's a joyous time. We want to make it nice and happy and celebratory. And that's what doulas do from the ICTC. Make that mom and dad smile. Make them feel empowered. Inform them so they can prepare for the 9 months and then hereafter, because it's not just the pregnancy, but we want babies to have a happy and wonderful life with great parents and a great community. So we're really about community building as well.
And we're talking about the Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair, Saturday, June 29th at Lentz Park. And, you know, here we're talking about African-American
doulas, birth traditions, training. I think that one thing that I really like to drill down into, since I have you here this morning, is that now you're coming from an alternative perspective. I'm saying that you're coming from an alternative perspective, not just being a midwife, but being an African influence midwife. That's a radical thing. I mean, I still think that there's some states maybe where you can't even do that in the United States, maybe. And I know you, Shafia Monroe, International Center for Traditional Childbearing, in past years, you have reached out to the African continent and brought doulas and healers from the African continent here and brought and taken people from the United States to the African continent and talked about the continuity of midwifery. And we're looking at this term doula. I think the term is maybe Greek or something, but a doula is a person who helps the whole family when a baby comes in. Talk a little bit about that, like the roots of your work, the cultural roots, and what is a doula, and why does that matter?
Thank you, Lisa, for giving me the opportunity to discuss that, because that is the foundation of the organization. Our goal actually is to increase the number of African midwives and healers in order to empower families to reduce maternal and infant mortality. That is the purpose of the ICTC. And for us to do that, we and I have done a lot of study over the years to see what is the birth practices in Africa. And I think it's important for us to say that we've done the studies, you know, Oregon Health Department, the National Institute for Health Medicine around the country, and we know that when African-born women come to the United States of America, their birth outcome is parallel to that of Caucasian women, which means they're having better birth outcomes than African-American born. So I wanted to look at why is that the difference. We've done the studies, know that, yes, we're exact same people, you know, from the same continent. But what's different about being in Africa is several things. One, it's a black continent. Therefore, you don't have the same type of stress of racism. But not only that, it's a culture. It's a very spiritual continent. They celebrate pregnancy. When someone's pregnant, you get congratulations. The village supports you. There's certain prayers. There's certain rituals. You don't birth alone. All the great aunties come. The grandmothers come. It's very woman-centered, even to the point in some cultures, and not all, different tribes are different beliefs, but they're all very similar. When a woman has her baby, either the women move to her home and take care of her up to 3 to 6 months, or she moves either with her husband's mother and family or back to her own home. So she's constantly being cared for and nurtured, massaged, given certain foods to drink. I remember talking to a friend here from Cote d'Ivoire who works here in Oregon. She explained, oh, yes, when my sister was pregnant, I remember my grandmother walked every day to her village and showered her and prayed over for the last month. I'm like, oh, my God, that was so moving to me. And when she was having her baby here in Portland, this particular woman from Ivory Coast, I was able to help her, and her mother flew in. And I was able to witness the really very intimate rituals of prayer and pouring things over her, that they would do a calm, responsive prayer in their own language. It was extremely moving. Her mother stayed for a year, massaged her, took care of her. And this is what we're talking about, keeping that culture. For African-Americans, because of being an enslaved people, we brought that culture with us on the plantations, and for a long time, there were black midwives who were able to continue the tradition. But like everything else, little by little, the erosion happened in the African-American community. So we lost that tradition of able to really care for each other. And then when you have a lot of families not staying together, and poverty and economic strife and gang violence and gentrification, you're not able to maintain that type of culture. So as a result, you have all this stress. And what I'm telling you actually is scientifically proven. So you can research this information. So we have been keeping a link from the beginning between our continent, Africa, and the United States of America. We just came back from Trinidad in May. We did a training in Trinidad. We have visited Colombia and worked with Afro-Colombian midwives. We've been to Puerto Rico, meeting with the Afro-Puerto Ricans. So we travel around the world to look at the cultures. And Africa has the best, the most solidified culture. The other continents have similar because the people are also taken from Africa and brought to Puerto Rico, Brazil, Colombia. They also have actually a poor outcome. So we look at the African tradition around unity, oneness, strong family, and we replicate those programs and that theory and those practices within our trainings.
All right. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio Live, progressive talk radio every Wednesday morning on KBOO. We're live in the studio with Shafia Monroe, International Center for Traditional Childbearing. We're talking about the Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair, Saturday, June 29th. And hey, listeners, what's your childbirth story? How did your birth impact the people around you and the wider community as well? And men, how do you see your role? Dude, you have a total role in this. Okay, so call in. We're at 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller. We've got Joanne. Joanne, what do you think?
Yes, hello. What do I think? Oh, people don't like what I... But anyway, in spite of that, you know, I have grandchildren and children who don't respect my life wisdom because they've been polluted by all the brainwash of life and computers and TV and that. But if they were to ask me about bringing children in the world, and they won't, I would say this for anyone. No, it's a horrible place to bring children into, especially for low-income people who don't have any support. And I'm wondering, Lisa, did you have the privilege of having a doula and that at your birthings?
Tell you what. Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for calling, Joanne. And Joanne, she's always putting the tough issues on the table. I always respect that about Joanne. And so my birth story, I'll show you my birth story, Joanne. I had never heard of a doula, right? And I was a KBOO volunteer. This was 22 years ago. This is when I first started. And so I met people here at KBOO who were starting out talking about doulas, and they volunteered. They volunteered to help doula my family because my firstborn child was a heart baby. He had to have open heart surgery twice in his first week, and then he had to have it again when he was 3 months old. And I didn't even know how to wipe a baby tuchus. I didn't even know anything about that. And so this community, a community of doulas, literally volunteered to come to my house and help us out. And, you know, just for a few weeks, because, I mean, I'm looking at you and saying, I didn't even know how to clean a diaper, okay? I thought I knew it all, whatever. And for my second kid, we had her at home. And actually, Martha Odom, who's also a KBOO programmer, she was the sage woman who helped us out, because my mom and my mother-in-law, other people, they weren't nearby. So that was kind of an issue. I think it's an issue. Like, if you're a young person, no matter how old you are, you're giving birth, I think you need community around you. It really is important. And one last thing, though. The other thing that was really key is my husband's a street performer, right? It's not the kind of thing you brag about all the time. And so there's a community of street performer moms all over the world, all over the world. And the street performer moms reached out, even from other continents, and brought me things like the peach oil to massage in your tummy. That was a big deal. Specifically peach-scented massage oil for your tummy. Without these other moms who knew weird things about my lifestyle, part of my community, I don't know what I would have done. Well, we would have muddled through. But I can see that Shafia wants to respond, especially this issue of, you know, do young people respect sage elders? And it's a messed up world. And so how do you deal with that?
But even more than that, and thank you, Joanne, for calling in, but the response of low-income people not bringing children into the world is a red flag for me, because I can almost say genocide. Because when you say low-income, we think of Black people. And so once again, it's controlling who has the right to birth their child. Does somebody who's rich can have a baby, or someone who's poor and of color cannot? And we're already seeing that in a certain kind of way, these kind of issues. And we want to be careful that we say that everyone has the right to birth their child. And instead of saying we shouldn't have children or they shouldn't have children, we should change the system. Low income or not, it's a mother, a father, they want their baby, they're good parents. So we have to be careful how that comes out. That can be alarming from the broader community. We're already hearing, oh, let's blame the victim and not look at what the issues are. So I just wanted to put that out there to the public.
And I also want to reach out, though, and say I totally respect where Joanne's coming from, because I know from experience that her story is a hard story. Her family story is a hard story. And I think that where Shafia Monroe International Center for Traditional Childbearing is coming from is, if you're really going to change society, you have to start with that baby. You have to start with the absolute most basic building block of society, which is a family. And we have another caller. I'd like to hear from some men also. I know that there's some really engaged dads out there, and you guys have a really important role. My husband, I have to say, and I feel kind of privileged that I have a husband. Now, we've worked on our relationship for decades, right, to keep it going. But without him, he was such an incredible part of the birth team. He's been an incredible part of the family. And there have been times when he actually, you know, he made big sacrifices to be there with the kids when other people chose not to. Again, talking about the street performer world, right? Which is got a lot of testosterone sloshing around. Okay. That sounded weird. Anyway, the number to call, 503-231-8187. Jessica. And we have Jessica on the phone. Jessica, what do you think?
Hello.
Hi, Jessica. What's going on with you?
Hi, my name's Jessica, and I actually had a birth story that I want to share. I recently gave birth to a beautiful daughter. She's now almost 7 months old on the 20th. And my first birth was to another girl, and that was a hospital birth 12 years ago. And so I have that comparison, giving birth in a hospital in comparison to my second birth, which was at the Andalus Water Birthing Center. And I'm so thankful I had a really beautiful, spiritual, just healthy, perfect pregnancy and birth and postpartum care. She came in the water, and it was 2 days before Thanksgiving, and I really had felt like I was empowered, just not only my midwife, but just the place itself was comfortable. The lighting was comfortable. I had candles. I could have scents. I felt free to move and give birth the way that I needed to give birth as a woman. Mm-hmm. And it was just so empowering, the education that they gave me.
Jessica, I have to cut in and say that your phone is cutting up. Your phone is cutting up, and we can hardly hear what you're saying. So one thing that I wanted to ask you was, so we're there with your birth. It was a great birth. Like, what do you think that matters? Your experience, how does that impact everybody else? And I think that it does. I mean, do you have any sense about that? Why is it important that people should have the empowering birth that they want? What impact does that have on society?
Oh, it's very important for the entire community. I think the way that we birth babies is extremely important. It's the beginning of, a new life. And I felt comfortable. I felt healthy. I felt supported. And my baby's healthy, and she's comfortable. And the whole process was not painful, and it was just so beautiful and
all
so
right.
spiritual.
Thanks a lot, Jessica. Thanks for calling. I do want to say on that some few years ago I said, oh, I don't even remember being in pain. And my husband went, I was there and you were in pain. I just had to say that. Put that out. Hello. The childbirth is such a weird thing when you think about it. I remember being 100 months pregnant, 40 months pregnant, and going, wait a minute, this thing has to come out. What's that going to look like? It is a very emotional thing. And it has, sometimes I think that pregnancy has an impact on the people around you, even if it's like pheromonal. Mm-hmm. People respond. And I know that there's some people who don't. I think that there's some people who deliberately block that because there is a big emotional door. And we were all born, right? I mean, it's one thing every human being has in common, like a very basic thing. We do have another caller. Let's quickly go to that caller. We've got John on the phone. John, what's going on with you today?
Well, I'm sitting in the parking lot at my gym waiting to go swimming, and I heard your radio program on the way here, and it strikes a chord with me, and I thought I'd chime in. How are you this morning?
We're okay. So what's your birth story, John? Do you have a birth story?
Oh, I think I probably have several.
All right. But what is your take about, why is childbirth important? How does one person's childbirth affect everyone? I'm just curious about that. I just want to drill into that.
How does one person's child birth affect everyone? Well, when a child is born, it brings a family together. I was listening to the stories about Africa, and it was heartwarming. My dad is a is a massage therapist, and he doesn't, you know, it's difficult for a man to make a real good living at that, and he doesn't do it for the money. He does it because he loves it, and I've seen him drive great distances for little to no money to work on people, you know, and he's done that with me. I'm actually a combat veteran, and I've had a lot of physical injuries, and he's helped me a lot. Well, I heard you talking about the pain, the 40 months of pain, the 100 months of birth, and your husband says, "Oh yeah, honey, you're in pain," and you had no idea of that. And
no.
I can relate to that. You know, you've got a thing that you're focusing on, and you can't afford to feel the pain in that moment. All you're doing, well, what you're doing is you're bringing that child into this world in the happiest, most joyful manner you can.
Or just get it the heck out. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I mean, in the moment, it gets crazy. It does. It gets crazy in the moment. So
it does get crazy. You know, my son was born. I came home from Iraq for 2 weeks for the birth of my son, and I was there, and it was wonderful, and it was terrifying all at the same time. And he was late. He came out at the end of my 2 weeks, and there he was. And good morning, son. All right, I got to get back on an airplane and go. My family was there. My brother and my mom and my sister and extended family, they picked up the slack,
That's wonderful.
It is wonderful. John, I want to ask you, how are you doing now? How are you?
Well, I'm tired. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night, okay. And my chai latte is a little hot, hotter than I like it. I'm good. I'm real good. I've been home for, let's see, I came home in 2005, and there's been a lot of adjustment, not just for me, but for my family. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to participate in a lot of children. I'm medically retired, and I have kind of become the family babysitter out of necessity and also because I'm available.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a blessing. You know, I get to be dad, and I get to be Uncle John. That's my job. You know, the kids come over to my house in the morning, and I fix breakfast, and my sister goes to work. She's a special ed teacher, and, you know, that's not just a 40-hour-a-week job. I don't know if anybody out there is a teacher, let alone a special ed teacher. It takes a lot out of you. So I missed out on a lot of things in different aspects, but I get to, you know, I'm 35. I get to spend the rest of my life being part of the family, and it's really wonderful.
Awesome.
A lot of my friends, a lot of my fellow veterans don't understand it. A lot of them do, but it's a path that has kind of both happened to me, and I've also chosen it.
John, I want to ask you a follow-up. When you're talking about, and we see this in our communities too, like, and we'll say men who don't get it, and sometimes we might say women who don't get it, people that don't understand the role that family plays, or maybe the need for men to be allowed to be nurturers. So when you're talking about, you know, maybe some people don't get it, how do they not get it? And like, what do you talk about? What does that look like?
Well, you talked about people blocking it, you know, being not wanting to feel it. In some instances in our society and culture, and with a lot of Western men, love is a vulnerability, you know. And it's true. When you are making yourself, when you are loving someone, you're opening up your heart and making yourself vulnerable. And there's a lot of trust that goes into that. And when people have been hurt, you know, they're not willing to do that. Or they've seen the example of their father or their grandfather or their uncle or their stepdad or whoever it was that was in their life when they were in impressionable years, which honestly, they're all impressionable years. So they don't.
Still impressionable. Yeah, go ahead.
Having been intimately acquainted with death and losing many of my brothers and my friends and loved ones, I've been in many situations where I did not think I was coming home. And I was able to make peace with that. But the hard thing to do was figuring out, all right, well, what do I do now? And the answer presented itself in a very tragic way. After I'd been home for about 2 years, my older brother got cancer, and he passed away. And he left behind two little babies. So my job became very clear.
Raising up those little babies. That's awesome.
That's right. I mean, it's I miss him to death, but you know, he took care of my boy when I wasn't here. So
wow, John.
You'll excuse me. It's a little
it's a little raw.
So it's the price to pay for getting it is really, really high.
Hmm.
But in dealing with extreme violence and massive death and tragedy and divorce and all these things with yourself or with your friends or people you care about, you feel it as a family, or you feel it as a tribe or as a community. You know, when one of my friends is hurting, you know, I'm hurting because they're a part of my family. I choose for them to be a part of my family.
John, I want to thank you for calling, and I hope you reach out and like leave your email or your phone number, because I would love to chat with you more about this, and I would love to bring you back on the air. It would be wonderful. I really appreciate your call.
I'd be happy to do that. I gotta get in with water aerobics with the rest of the old folks.
Okay.
I'm the youngest guy in water aerobics, but it's the only way I can move.
All right. Well, John, thank you so much for calling. Really appreciate your call.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you again. You guys have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
All right,
great.
Bye.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Shafia Monroe. We're talking about the work of doulas. We're talking about the if the magical engineering pixie could cut off that line, would be awesome. Awesome. We're talking about childbirth. We're talking about the significance of childbirth and nurturing families to the whole community. Shafia, here's the thing. John put some tough stuff on the table there now when we're talking about the African-American community. Some of the same things that he's talking about applies, because in my job, I'm always amazed by the fact that virtually everyone I know who's African-American in Portland, Oregon, has a murdered relative. Virtually every single one, even children, have a murdered relative, and they know about it. So, you know, and we're talking about nurturing children coming in, we're talking about watching sometimes young people going back out the door, because that's what the infant mortality rate is too. Can you talk a little bit about that significance of death to birth and how, like, the work that you're doing, there's a part of it that we're not even seeing that you're dealing with as you're working with people who are doulas and working with young people. So talk a little bit about that. And maybe even this could be an entree to the research that you did about birth outcomes last year.
Thank you again, Lisa. I just want to just clarify the word doula for the audience. So it is a Greek word, as Lisa mentioned, but really it was a person's mother. And I think the gentleman who just spoke talked about his mother and extended family. So really it's a person who provides support. But not just support. Historically, someone's mother was educated about birth. Historically, women had 7 to 12 children. It was normal. And so with that experience and all of her sisters having babies, women knew about birth. So we heard the word devastating or frightening, those kind of words, because we're in a society that does not show birth. It's hidden away, and so we don't see it. And we don't see something, you're not familiar, and it creates fear. So having a doula, a trained person who understands the emotional needs, the language, sees it as normal and wonderful, provides support as our mothers used to. And some mothers still do, but the doula will also work with the moms. I just wanted to segue into that. And so the work is very holistic, because birth is holistic. And yes, birth is entry point of coming in. And also midwives, I'm switching over, who actually catch the baby, not the doulas, have also historically in the African-American community back in the early 1900s were also the ones that helped transition from life back to the other world. So there is a well-rounded piece there. But what ICTC wants to do, when we provide professionals and engage our community and educate our community about the beauty of birth and having family support, that translates into good breastfeeding outcomes. It translates into the father being empowered and included and valued in the birth process. It translates into our children going to school ready to learn and succeeding with their wonderful, brilliant minds. It translates into our young men and young women feeling that there's other things to do besides be frustrated about their situation and have negative consequences in their own lives, whether it's death or long-term imprisonment. You know, it translates how we take care of our elders. So the foundation of looking at birth as a spiritual African tradition of again, God, because that's for Black people. We are very spiritual people. The ancestors, all that foundation translates into a holistic, healthy society. And going back to Africa again, we see that. We see the respect for the elders, taking care of our elders, the same that we saw in the South where grandmother or big mama or nana was the matriarch who had influence and she had respect. And when she needed something, the community was there. I think importantly, we still have that, but we need to up it quite a bit. And I think having the ICTC continue to give this type of information, but also a how-to, to come to our trainings, which are 29 hours to learn the Afrocentric style of birthing, to learn what the options are, to learn what the historical foods were. When we say food, soul food, it's not Kentucky Fried Chicken. Soul food is food that feeds the soul, which is actually very African-based, such as wet foods, the okra stew, the okra and corn that your grandmother made from Mississippi, you know, the wet black-eyed peas. All we call it wet food because when you eat it, it hydrates the body. It puts water back into the body. Being pregnant, you lose water because you're breathing for two and you're excreting for two. So you always want to put more liquids back into your body. So the historical African-based diet is roots, vegetables, fruit, water, the watermelon juice. It's not what we see today of the pork rinds and the pigtails and the pulled pork. That is another type of diet that we call the enslaved diet, a forced diet, the same diet that's creating hypertension, diabetes, high vascular problems. So we look at the death rate between African-born and African-American, again, a big divide because their diet is very different. And we see the diet becoming more westernized, as we see now, as America goes into parts of Africa and India and brings a McDonald's. I just came back from Trinidad. I was so disappointed to see Wendy's on the street, McDonald's, Burgerville. They have all the exact same fast foods. You know what? They have the exact same problems as African-Americans are right now. And actually, any American eating those foods. Mm-hmm. So we definitely talk about the diet, the spiritual aspect, the exercise. And our event talks about fathers coming, because as that gentleman mentioned, being vulnerable in Africa, men hold hands. They have that trust and love. They know that.
Down the street with their arms around each other and nobody goes, no homo, or whatever
exactly.
Crazy stuff.
And they kiss the babies and they hold the babies and they reverend the babies and they reverend the woman that's carrying their baby. And I always tell the young men out there and the older men, if you say you love your baby, then you have to, at the minimum, respect this mother. Even if you can't be together, you have to respect the mother. And it's the man's job to feed the baby. If you don't feed the mom, she cannot feed the baby. The baby's inside of her. If you don't feed the mom, she can't produce milk. So if you're not feeding that mother, I hate to say, you're the responsible person. It is going to be on you on a spiritual life that your baby did not survive if you're not doing your job. And for those men who are doing their job, and I know many who are, we love you, we commend you, you know, keep being a leader in your community around that. But that's what it's going to take. It takes a village. We are that village.
All right. And we do have another caller. Let's go grab that other caller. Curtis. Is that you, Curtis? Ernest. What's going on, man?
Good morning. How are you? Good morning, Jafia.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to hear your voice. And I wanted to call in and commend Jafia on the tremendous work she does in the community.
Thank you.
The type of influence that it has. It's very relevant and so important in the African-American community that young women try and mirror Shafia's influence and keep that continuum going. Or, you know, we cease to exist culturally without that. And I feel that her work is so vital. And it's been a great influence on my family also. I have a daughter that's in midwifery. So, and I don't know if that was a direct influence from Shafia or just the exposure of being around her, but somewhere I felt that it seeped in, and it was a great inspiration part, just knowing Shafia and her family and being around them. I think that exposure has been tremendous. And I'm speaking from the perspective of an African-American father that had the opportunity to raise my children in the early days, stay home with them, and be a stay-at-home dad. And it was tremendous, the things I learned and the influence I see that I had on them and how it rounded them out in life. And that's all I wanted to say about that.
Thanks
and
a lot.
Thanks again, Sophia.
Thank you, Ernest. Tell the family I said hello. Give my love.
Thank you.
I will.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Sophia Monroe of the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. And we are talking about events, a big event that she has, that the organization has coming up Saturday, June 29th, an Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair. It's going to be at Lentz Park starting at 10 a.m. Free family event for pregnant women, new mothers and fathers to learn tips for a healthy pregnancy, breastfeeding tips, and newborn care. Ernest just called, and he was talking about the time spent with his kids when they were young. My sister Sandy taught me things that nobody else taught me. She said, when I was pregnant, she said, decide in advance what you're going to spank the kid for, because when you're in mad, it's too late to figure that out. So we sat around and we said, okay, if they run in the street, we'll spank them. That was just such a basic thing. It's like, how do we learn how to parent fascinates me. She also said, Ernest, if you're listening, she said, you know, you may think that you don't want to spend this time at home and you're wishing you could go out and do something else, but the time you spend with your kids is money in the bank. She said it's money in the bank, which is awesome because my kids are adults now and they are some of my favorite people in the world. So, Ernest brought up, Sophia, this issue about the mentoring work that you do with women, actually all kinds of women, not just African or African-American women, all kinds of women.
True.
Now, talk about all the things now that you do at the ICTC. You have a new office on MLK. Is that a new office?
It's a new office, 2942 Northeast MLK. The cross street is North Morris.
Okay. You do other events where you just bring people together. I feel as though I've missed some of them. Sorry about that. So we have this big pregnancy fair coming up June 29th. But you have luncheons or coffees or things where you invite people and talk a little bit about that. How are you building community around your work?
We're building community, we say, one family at a time, but also collectively. We have a once-a-month birth justice meeting where women of all ethnicities, backgrounds, agreements come together, and we have a potluck, and we discuss issues that we want to address, important, that's going to improve birth outcome, as well as support women who are considering becoming midwives, who are considering being doulas, who are new mothers, who are old mothers, and we do that. We also are beginning to do a breastfeeding coalition. It's called the African American Breastfeeding Coalition, but we have all partners involved, a way to get businesses to put a sticker in their window that says breastfeeding is supported here. When we did our breastfeeding survey in contract with the WIC of Multnomah County, we learned that women of color, particularly African American women, felt there's no place to breastfeed. They couldn't go to the barbershop or their hair salon or the Fred Meyers. So we create a coalition that's asking business, if you support breastfeeding, to put a stick in the window. We know that Oregon passed a law some time ago. You are allowed to breastfeed publicly, mm-hmm, any place you want. But if people don't feel it, even though it's the law, they're still not going to engage in it, which means they'll breastfeed less because they're out more. So they'll wind up not able to do it. And little by little, they'll wind up exclusively bottle feeding.
And part of that is the people around you.
Right.
Like not making it okay. I've heard people complain about seeing a woman on the bus.
Exactly.
Bubbity bubbity ba. And I got in that person's face when they complained about that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, no. We have childbirth classes that we're doing. And our biggest thing, I think, is our doula trainings, that we're training women who want to be, we call them birth companion. Our lay term is a doula is really a birth companion, someone who's your companion, not only during the pregnancy, not only during labor and the birth, but also after the baby's born. We don't talk about that. Lisa brought up a little bit, coming home with that new baby from the hospital. Most of our clients are birthing in hospital or even at home. And your mom did come from New Mexico or Wisconsin State, but she only could stay for
2 weeks.
But again, African culture, you get support from 3 to 6 months because it takes 3 months to even feel okay again as a woman. Your body takes time to go back to its pre-pregnancy state, not just physical, but also emotion. The baby needs 3 months to figure out, oh, where am I? I'm from being in a warm water environment where I'm never hungry, I'm never cold, to now being touched, feeling wind, feeling hunger. So the baby has to adjust. So it really does take 3 months. So that postpartum support with our doulas trained to come to the home and to support you. If there's no one that's holding the baby while you take a shower, changing your bed, making little Bobby a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and then take him out in the front so he can run around and scream and you can lay down without trying to take care of the 4-year-old with your guilt and the newborn. So we do all those things. Talking to dad, we think, well, dad wants to also bond. He doesn't want us to be the worker. He wants me to sit down and hold his baby, look at his significant other and say, wow, this is wonderful. So we allow that space by doing what he would do, empty the trash, you know, again, bring the other child out. So those are things, the emotional aspects of pregnancy. And a lot of things that we see around pregnancy where women say I had a hard time is because we didn't have the Lisa sister, you know, to tell us up front. Yep. And that's what the birth companion does. If your mom can't be there for you, and sometimes our moms don't know because they didn't know. And so you need to find another voice that's not the medical voice, as a community voice. So we do that. A lot of trainings. When people call in, we provide a doula as much as possible, a low-income doula to a woman who wants a doula. Right now, it's important to know that doulas do charge. It is a profession, so people become doulas to make a living. So if you don't have money, you don't have the $900 to pay for a doula. So doulas have been exclusively for upper-income families. We did have a bill passed, HB 3311, that passed with Representative Tina Kotek and Representative Lou Frederick carried that bill. And so now we're looking at, by 2014, with the Healthcare Transformation Act and with Governor Kungoski did getting a waiver, that now, for the first time, we believe that women on Medicaid can have their doula paid for them. And that is the first time that's ever happened in the country.
That's straight-ahead preventative right there.
That's
straight
right.
Ahead preventative.
So we're excited about that bill going through, and ICTC with a group of other partners help create that legislative concept.
Right. And I do want to say also about the cost of a doula, the cost of a midwife. A friend of mine, you know, it's an art and a science, and it's predominantly female. And I see people shortchanging midwives all the time, and it makes me annoyed. And I had a friend that went, she got training, she got certified. She left the profession because of how much time she had to spend trying to get her clients to pay for her services, which is unconscionable, in my personal opinion. I know that there's people out there that feel like the air is free, the water is free. Actually, I have to pay for the water. The air is free, so everything should be free. But I want to put this out there. If someone's helping you, especially if someone's a woman and you know they're getting paid less than men, I know that's not really necessarily all your fault, men, but I'm just saying, respect people who are female professionals and don't act like you should get everything that they do for free. And I'm saying that as the wife of a street performer, right? Where your boss maybe pays you a buck if they feel like it. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Shafia Monroe, the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. We're hashing out stuff about childbirth. Like, why does it matter? And why does it matter that we all support families, including the dads, you know? And I know that there's a lot of issues around that. There's generational issues also in the white community too, around, you know, when my mom, who was a surgical nurse for 45 years, when my mom had her babies and we were all born like between 1958 and 1962, the hospital didn't encourage the dad to be there. The hospital shoved formula at everyone immediately, right? And so there are certain continuities there that my mom's generation also missed out on.
Right.
And when I started having babies, I'm sort of the weird sheep of the family. A lot of people in my family started thinking differently about things when I came along and when I started to do things, including my sister, who actually sort of was empowered in saying, wow, you mean you care what I think? Well, this is what I think. And that's part of what's important about this also. We haven't talked about that so much. Maybe Joanne touched on it a little bit. The respect people have for a sage voice is a very important thing. And I'm saying men know things too about some of this stuff, and it surprises me the things that they know. But I also, Shafia, before we finish this show, we're starting to run out of show. These issues are really important in the Black community. And as we're seeing, as a friend of mine, Billy Don, used to say, you know, a lot of things in this world are going to change because of love. And people from different races are going to fall in love and they're going to have babies. And that's going to have more of an impact than anything else, right? We're watching George Bush, whose grandchildren are all Hispanic, right? And they speak Spanish and he does too. It's interesting. So as we're looking at these issues about the Afrocentric Pregnancy Fair, okay, it's coming up Saturday, June 29th. I have to put this out. Talk about the issues you found with the research that you did in combination with Multnomah County about birth disparities, because we really have it, and we'll get into the activities, it's true. But I just want to say a minute why we're focusing on the Black community, the African-American community. There are real issues here. If you could put that on a bumper sticker.
I will just say the health inequities that African-American families experience is well documented. But we did do a study in 2011. We interviewed 245 women who self-identified as Black, and we asked a question about their birth experience, and we found that 75%...
In Multnomah County, go ahead.
In Multnomah County, thank you. 75% of the women that we interviewed did put that they felt fear or the word racism during their actual birth. So they had a lot of concerns about how they were treated. The breastfeeding rates were lower. They were not able to access childbirth education classes. So 52% said they birthed, they did not have childbirth classes. And another high number was that I would say about 65% birthed alone. So they did not have anybody with them. So no partner, no family member, from according to our statistics. And also just the access of Black women accessing prenatal care also tends to have a bigger gap. And there's a lot of reasons. You know, we're still researching why are these problems still happening at this point in our society. I don't know. I know they are happening. And again, what we do is try to address them. And not, if you want to talk about, you know, the why it's for Black people, well, we look at the fact that we know that African-American people are racially profiled, being stopped more by police. We know they get a longer sentence for the same crime as a white American. They often don't get bail. It's a higher bail. They're able to rent a house or buy a house has been redlined. So these are things that we know. So that's
no health insurance.
No health insurance. So that's why we're focusing on this specifically being for African descent women or an Afrocentric pregnancy fear. We want the message to know, we could have said pregnancy fear, but we want to know that in Oregon, in Portland, in Multnomah County, if you can make it, this particular event that's designed for you, it's going to have drumming. It's going to have...
Talk about the event coming up Saturday, June 29th
yes,
at Lentz Park.
Yes, African drumming, head wrapping workshops. How do you keep that gorgeous scarf on your head? How do you tie the baby on your back? How to use the birth ball? Having massage. You know, what is prenatal yoga, which actually, by the way, has an African influence. So prenatal yoga, alternative healing. We have a couple of African naturopath will be there. African-American obstetrician will be there. Belly casting, wrapping that belly and getting that wonderful frame. Henna tattoos and children's face painting. And, of course, we have Care Oregon, Providence, HBI, G diapers, how to use cloth diapers and disposable cloth diapers. Right now, she told me, the woman, there's 2 billion disposable diapers in landfills. 2 billion. So we're hurting our earth by not using cloth diapers for our babies. So we're going to talk about that at the conference, at the event. There's also going to be free blood lead testing taken. So you can have your children get a test for lead, which is very high in a lot of our communities. Also, the fun thing, 12:30 to 1, we're going to have a contest for the best decorated stroller. That's not on the flyer, but if you bring your stroller decorated at 12:30, there's 3 cash prizes for the best decorated stroller number 2, stroller number 3. So just a fun thing that we all have strollers, we can decorate them, meet doulas, meet midwives, have childbirth class. And it's going to be a great thing. We say bring your blanket and bring your snacks and come and enjoy drumming and a DJ and so much more.
And this is for the whole family.
The whole family, and anyone's welcome. So if you are not African-American, you want to come out and meet and help, we are looking for volunteers to help set up at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we're still looking for donations. We're asking businesses to go online, www.ictcmidwives.org, and make a $50 donation, because this is free. And for us to rent the tables, the chairs, the DJ has to have a fee, et cetera. We are looking for a donation. We're looking for help. So again, www.ictcmidwives.org or 503-460-9324, 503-460-9324. Call and say, hey, we want to help out. Can we? You absolutely can. We want to donate. You sure can.
I want to ask you, so we have like 1 minute left, Shafia. So if you know someone in your world who's going to give birth, what's the best way that we can support our family, neighbors, friends who are pregnant? We're talking about the men that are pregnant and the women are pregnant. I'm telling you, men get pregnant. I know that sounds
weird.
They do.
No, it's called cultivate. They do. Absolutely. Gain weight,
so
headaches.
How do we support them?
I always say the first thing I do is say, you know, congratulations. And I have women say to me all the time, no one has ever said to me, congratulations. Instead they hear, you know, it depends what world you're coming from. But congratulate them, give them a listening ear, bring them fruit, and be supportive. You know, don't judge, regardless of how they decide to get pregnant or their age. If they decide to maintain their pregnancy, embrace them wholeheartedly and support them. Anywhere from giving them a seat on the bus to a ride to the store, calling them, just how are you feeling? So many women feel isolated. A new study just came out, again, for African-American women and low-income women. They feel isolated in their own community. There's no one to talk to. They tend to be by themselves. And so pregnancy is, we're mammals. And most mammals run in flocks. You know, female horses, female dolphins, female goats, females hang together and they support each other. And in fact, I was happy to hear that dolphins have a midwife in the water, and so don't whales. They have a female midwife dolphin that helps bring the baby to the water, take their first breath, because they come out tail first. So we're humans and we're mammals, and we need community support. We're not isolated beings. So just provide that circle of love and care.
Okay, now I'm a sage lady, right? I'm 50 years old now. I'm putting it out to you. All these babies are all of our babies.
That's
they
right.
They are
Thank
all
you.
Of our babies. And you look at that baby in the face, that baby's going to remember you forever.
That's
You're going
right.
to be remembering that baby. You're going to be impacting the future of our own community. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Shafia Monroe. More on her work at ICTC.org. Special thanks to ICTCmidwives.org. ICTCmidwives.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Linda Olson Osterlund.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, and our new frequency, 104.3, Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next on Political Perspectives, your host Linda Olson Osterlund interviews journalist Victoria Bertain about justice denied at Guantanamo. She's the author of the recent article, Guilty Until Proven Innocent, How to Pre-Convict an American.
Our listeners in Corvallis and Albany will be happy to hear that we have replaced the failed translator and installed a brand new translator. KBOO's new frequency for Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath is 104.3.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Political Perspectives on KBOO. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, your host for the next half hour.